if you had to make school look easy or you weren't smart, you know, if you put in, if you put in effort into like school, like you were dumb. Like if you studied a lot, you were dumb because you had to study to get good grades. But in life, like that's not how life works, you know, like it's not like life is not like it just doesn't look easy. And, you know, the things that the people who do well are the ones who actually study, you know, who take the time to do the work. And we can all think about those people who got really, really good grades and we go, oh, they're just so smart. But if you were to go home, you know, with them, you would have seen them studying and their, you know, hours that they spent doing the actual homework and doing the reading and all of these things. You don't always see the behind the scenes. And I just think that the Xers and the boomers really came from a system where things had to look easy, and if you tried and you invested your time and your effort, you know, into something, it meant that you were kind of like deficient, and it meant that you weren't as, you know, as good, or you weren't enough. And so, you know, I think that's a very, you know, that's just my perspective and my observation. Who am I to say that that's any truth?
This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 94, with the founder of Millennial Skills, Hector Santiesteban.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things geek.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining me today. I'm your host, JC Preston, and I'm founder of New Inceptions, a website dedicated in helping people create their own personal freedom. In this podcast, released each Thursday, my co-hosts and I bring you life lessons or a message from successful entrepreneurs, experts, and artists to help you do your life's work and live a lifestyle that you're proud of. With me in this session is a guest that I think you guys are really going to enjoy, and like me, he learned a lot about entrepreneurship and his direct sales background. And now he's transitioning that knowledge online in a meaningful and impactful way. And I originally bumped into him in past guest Arnie Giske's group, Millennial Entrepreneur Community, but he's really starting to rock his own group, which is currently called the Entrepreneur Skills for Millennials. Right now, it has just under 800 members, but I expect that number to skyrocket before too long. Hector Santiesteban is his name, and he fascinates me because even though I know he's just getting started, like a lot of our guests I've had in the past, and you know, it's been a while since I've had people that are just getting started on the show, there's one major difference. He's a horse that I know is going to win. He has the right pedigree, and he surrounds himself with the right people. You know, I wanted to make sure that you guys got a glimpse of him before he gets known a bit more, and I want you to have the feeling I have with Pat Flynn. As you know, I've practically been following Pat ever since he started his site, and based on the little bit that I've seen of Hector, he has what it takes, and he's taking the right action at the right time. Like Pat, who initially was posting on forums and other sites across the web and leaving reviews and all kinds of things that he could get backlinks back to his site, Hector is doing the same things on other Facebook groups, and he's simply adding value wherever he goes. You'll also notice that he uses the term mastermind several times in this conversation. And I believe, as I always have, that being part of a forward moving mastermind is vital to quicker success in a business. Not only does it give you challenges and ways to improve your business, but it also gives you a much needed accountability. So in this session with Hector today, we talk about several things in depth, and we learn how he ended up becoming a national champion sales manager, why he started working with millennials and specifically start Millennial Skills, what he thinks about niching down is something else that we're talking about. And we also find out why it's important to find clarity. And finally, we also talk about several of the biggest struggles that he's had thus far while moving into the expert space. You know, this one is definitely a great mindset session that I think you guys are really going to get a ton out of and really going to appreciate down the road that you heard. Before we get into this one, though, I want to remind you guys about Read It For Me. You know, podcasts are great to listen to get little nuggets of great information. But many times, the guests or the hosts themselves leave out the biggest pieces for you to actually learn something in depth. A lot of times, that's actually part of the strategy. So the thing is that you end up buying their book with the intent of learning more. But if you're like me, those books just tend to accumulate. And sure, you can listen to audiobook versions, but you might miss out on key parts if you're not paying attention. You know, and that's why I'm a member of Read It For Me. Read It For Me is the number one book summary service for entrepreneurs, executives, and those that want to be one someday. And if you're like me and you hear about all these great books that are being released all the time, but you find yourself with limited time to read them, this is definitely the place for you. And having started as a way to build traffic, which is a service they provide and they still promote quite a bit if you want to, you know, use that for your own social media, it has grown to be a vast library of business and success book summaries. And these 12-minute summaries are available as video, audio, and text. And I mean, these things are so well put together that if you wanted to make a presentation out of one of them, you could totally do that. Their customers include corporations like Zappos, American Express, BMO Bank, Cornell University, and many others. And if you're a coach or have clients you want to build better relationships with, you know, this is a perfect tool to do just that as well. By going over to readitfor.me/AOL podcast, you can get your free membership today. Normally valued at $10 a month, this membership provides you with text summaries daily so you can learn while you're on the go. And if that sounds like a great deal, it definitely is. I mean, how much would you have to pay someone to summarize books for you daily? Probably not $10 a month. I mean, it's going to take a lot more time and a lot more money to be able to do that. So this is completely a steal. So yeah, again, get started today by going to readitfor.me/AOL podcast. And I'm sure you're going to love this as much as I do. So again, that's readitfor.me/AOL podcast. All right. That said, show notes for this episode can be found at newinceptions.com/94, and I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. JC here. Thanks for joining me today. Today's guest is someone I met through Arnie Jiske as well as Saba Ali, two of my past guests. And if you follow me on the blog, you know that one of my favorite mega Facebook groups recently has been Arnie's Millennial Entrepreneur Group. And needless to say that place is definitely on fire. In fact, he's threatening to cut people out because the group is growing so quickly. But one of the folks who is always adding a ton of value in that group and is today's guest says his mission is to help millennials make more money in a meaningful way. And he aims to provide young entrepreneurs and professionals with the life skills that school and teachers didn't necessarily give them. And his background includes being a national champion sales manager from Southern California, where he currently resides with his fiance and his two dogs. And his name is Hector Santiesteban. So, hey, Hector, what's going on, man?
What's going on, man? I'm excited to be here. I'm glad you reached out. This is exciting because, you know, your audience is my people, and your audience is really who I am really excited about, you know, connecting with. So excited to be here.
Yeah. We have a lot of things in common. In fact, when I first started off this podcast, I mean, it was practically the same group of people that, you know, you're helping. But because I'm the age that I'm at and connect with Xers as well as millennials, I kind of found myself dropping out of that exclusively. But yeah, definitely a lot of similarities, and definitely appreciate having you on. But definitely have a lot of things going on yourself. I mean, first off, congrats on being engaged. You and Shailene look like you're a great match. Have you guys figured out the big date yet?
Yeah, it's going to be next year, early next year. And she's a big planner. I'm lucky that she likes and enjoys planning all that stuff. So I just get to sign off on you know, yes or no. And she kind of handles the rest. So it's been a great partnership in that regard, too.
Yeah, I got married about 4 years back myself. And it's pretty interesting. I mean, just especially going into it, is definitely a ride, and hopefully things work out for you, because when the day actually comes, yeah, things can get a little hectic, especially, you know, if you make it all personal. So
yeah, it's been interesting, especially because we're both kind of entrepreneurs and we both work from home. So It's been a definitely growing experience, and I'm sure a new experience that not a lot of couples spend as much time as we do just together, just because we're both working from home. So it's good. I think we're ready, and we're both interested in growth and in personal development, and you know, we both have our separate, you know, things going on, and so it's good though. Okay.
I was wondering, I mean, I didn't know if she was one of the, like, my wife works out of the house, so, you know, that's kind of awkward, because, you know, a lot of people have that perception that it's like, she has a job, and what does JC do? He stays at home in his office, quote, all the time, you know? And
it's just, yeah, she the other day, she was talking to her mom, and she's like, well, he's working, and I'm like, well, you know, well, actually, he's in his office right now, so who knows what he's doing in there, you know, if he's actually working, but it's funny. So you know exactly the plight that we go through.
Yeah, it can be kind of trippy and annoying sometimes at the same time. But anyway, you also have a couple dogs. I'm a dog guy myself. I have two labs and a German Shepherd. What kind of dogs and what are their names?
One's a pit bull that's a little over a year, and she's the sweetest thing that you'd ever meet and the most harmless thing. And then the little Fireball, I have a little kind of terrier mutt. That's a little white fluffy thing that she was the runt of the litter, and she's the Fireball that goes and tries to attack everybody and yelly. So
it's funny. The smaller the dog, the more ferocious they seem.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I've noticed. It's one of the reasons why I like big dogs, because they're just kind of laid back, you know, up to a point. And I don't know, man, some of the Chihuahuas that I've met have been some of the most ferocious dogs I've ever, you know, whatever. But people are like, oh, they're so cute. They're perpetual puppies. And I'm like, yeah, good luck with that. So, yeah, no, I mean, and if they're not ferocious, then they do have that little, they're overly smart. So good on you for having a little terrier.
Yeah, they get along, and we kind of keep them in line, and it's funny that, you know, they're good dogs, so I'm definitely grateful. And we don't have any kids, so they kind of get all the attention, and they take up all the time. So it's a good deal.
Dog kids, gotta love them. So you're in Southern California. How'd you end up there? I mean, were you originally from there? Did you go to school?
Yeah,
there?
I was born and raised here. I haven't gone far at all. I've my parents live 10, 15 minutes away from me. And I'll tell you, the funny statistic is all three of my schools, my middle school, my high school, and my college were all on one large street here on the west side of LA. It's like, it's one big street that actually runs into the airport. So people drive on it all the time, but it, you know, they were all about 3 miles apart from each other, but I really didn't go far, because I landed, my dad, his family ended up in Venice Beach, California. So, like, you know, that's where I grew up, and my grandparents and all my friends and all my family were, you know, were by the beach, and it didn't make sense for me to go far. You know, I went to school out here, and I mean, look out the window right now, and it's like 72, and yesterday it was like 75 and sunny. So I just, there wasn't very much, you know, very much reason to leave. Mm-hmm. As I'm getting, you know, older and becoming an adult for much longer and paying rent and looking at all the real estate prices, that may change. Because I don't know how much, I don't know if this sunshine, you know, it's sunny other places too. That's for damn sure.
Yeah.
But it's been fun. I've got a kind of a big family here in Southern California. So, I haven't had reason to go far, but that may change in the coming years.
Right.
Especially with so many of our community being, you know, digital nomads, and this whole idea of kind of traveling the world, you know, with your laptop and stuff. You know, who knows?
Right.
what the future may bring.
Well, but there's also something said about, I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm definitely not a minimalist, because even my, you know, my computer here, I have three monitors. I like my space, you know, and it's just like, I couldn't really readily pack that up unless, you know, they made them foldable. And even then it would be awkward as heck. Just be like, hold on a second. Let me roll them all out. It's kind of be like one of those photographer guys that has all that gear. Right. And it's just, I don't know. I don't see it too practical in the way that I work, but yeah, more power to you.
That's a big commitment. You know, my fiance has some family in Puerto Rico. So if anything, we might just go spend some time over there and pull the John Lee Dumas card, and go live, you know, where it's cheap a little bit. So right. Who knows? It's cool. The opportunities that people have these days, you know, that wasn't possible, you know, even 5 years ago, I think that opportunity wasn't really possible, like it is today.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And it's always changing. I mean, just, someone else that, you know, I always promote Fizzle on here. Well, one of the founders, Corbett Barr, you know, half the year he'll live in Portland, Oregon, and the other half he's down in Mexico. And it's just like, sounds like a good life, dude. You know, so for sure. So, also in your bio, it says that you're a national champion, or have been a national champion sales manager. What's that about?
Yeah, I came up, and that's kind of where I got my business chops, was in the direct sales game. And I liken it to like old school affiliate marketing, where essentially you were selling someone else's product, and did that as a sales trainer. So in 2014 was the first year that we did it. We, you know, there's hundreds of organizations in the nation, and we went from, the cool thing was the year before that we had did just about $300,000, and then the next year we added on some really cool people to our team, and we just did over 1.4 million. You know, won a championship, and, you know, they could give out trophies and stuff like that. And so it was a, you know, a cool celebration and stuff. And, the funny thing about that though, is they changed a lot of the rules for the contest. So because we kicked everybody's ass so much, but then, they didn't think that we could really do it again. And so we revamped our team the next year, and we did a million again. And then we did a million again the next year with a different team. And so, you know, I just, you know, they call it, they just, we, it's just, it's fun to kind of prove people wrong. And I think that's what drives me. So, 2014 was the year that we had the championship. And then we continued to, by the end of 2016, when I kind of hung up my, you know, the ropes and, you know, hung up my cleats, for lack of a better term there. We had broke the 5 million mark, and, you know, done some cool things with consistency. So that's where I got my training, and really where I got my passion for helping young people do things in the entrepreneur space.
Gotcha. So obviously you said you got your training through that. I mean, so what you're saying is that your school time did nothing for you when you were going into that.
Put me in debt, you know, and I had some fun, I guess, but in terms of actual practical training and practical knowledge of running a business, what I got there was not comparable to what I spent, in the least bit, you know, and there are courses these days that some people say are drastically expensive. And I'll tell you, well, try 100x that for a degree, you know, and I'm not, you know, not kidding when it comes to that. You know, I went to a private school in the West Coast here, and legit, you know, it was, you know, some courses are $2,000. I paid $200,000. And, you know, so it's all about value, you know, and don't get me wrong. It was a cool experience, and I don't know that I would trade it in. Mm-hmm. But it didn't necessarily prepare me. What I was lucky enough to have was to be doing it side by side while I was going to school. I worked my way all the way as an individual sales rep all the way through college. Okay. And then once I graduated college, I actually opened up my own kind of organization, and we started recruiting, and we had an office about 2 miles from the beach. And there were times where I would have, you know, over 70 people in front of me one time, where I was training them in one room. We had to rent out the room, you know, down the hall, because they wouldn't fit in our office. And, you know, at times where we'd have over 150 people just directly, you know, in our organization reporting to us. And you know, that's so I guess in all of that was where I really learned how to run kind of a business. So for me, what's great is that for solopreneurs, not that it's so simple, but or not that it's so easy, because it's never easy. It's challenging as hell. But it's so much simpler than managing all of that. And at the beginning of 2017 is when I was sitting in a room with Jeff Hoffman, a billionaire, you know, founder of Priceline, and he said that you can't build two things. You can't have your feet in two different buckets, is what he said it, and I'm paraphrasing. But I realized that I was trying to build this millennial skills thing while I was building, you know, this other organization, and I was half-assing both of them. And that's just, it wasn't fair to the people, you know, to my employees. It just wasn't fair to them that I wasn't giving my full effort to them because their opportunities was being affected to it. And it also wasn't fair to my tribe and my audience and the people that I overhear that I was saying that I was, you know, committed to helping and giving, you know, content and doing that, because that wasn't happening either. So, put that, you know, made a commitment, kind of put the wheels in motion to, you know, shut that operation down, and then made the leap into the digital space. And since then, you know, started taking on some other clients and stuff like that who have asked for some other things, like, you know, Facebook ads and funnels and all that stuff, just because you learn, you know, those skills. But it's been a wild ride for sure. It's definitely not all roses ever, but I can definitely say I'm making less money, you know, at least top line for sure, making less money. But so much happier on a day to day basis. You know, I don't have to deal with LA traffic all day.
Right.
I drive outside like two or three times a week, and it's great because LA traffic is a pain in the ass. So,
yeah. You had talked about, we were talking about travel or just getting out a little bit more. For one, I don't think that you're going to want to transfer to Florida because it's awfully humid during the summer down there. You don't get the nice wind that you get. But if you ever do make it out, maybe like say Tennessee or would be a really good location for you for a break from all the LA stuff that goes on out there. Because if you come up here to Indiana, you're probably going to be, well, driven out by the cold that eventually does come. So,
but yeah, we don't do well with cold here in LA. It gets below like 55 and people start freaking out. I know I do, you know, so.
Well, for us from the north, that's shorts and hoodie weather. But so I mean, obviously, like me, you're pretty interested in helping millennials figure out the world past graduation. And personally, I feel that, you know, a lot of the schooling and as you've been saying, even the society at large doesn't really prepare majority of us for real life. And you know, I recently had a guest on not too long ago by the name of Brian Drury, and had it not been for his traveling during his college years, you know, he might have felt stuck in a small town in Wisconsin, but traveling abroad allowed him to see there was much more to the world than his daily grind. And, you know, he eventually started overcoming graduation because of those experiences. For me, you know, I had the luxury of not growing up with tech my entire life. You know, I'm 35, so that makes me the oldest you can actually be considered a millennial. And a lot of my peers that I went to college with, you know, or even high school with, definitely more of a mix of millennials and Gen Xers. So why did you feel that you wanted to work specifically with millennials?
I think it's just a level of experience and competency and maybe, you know, I think millennials is a mindset more than anything. And what I learned this when I would run interviews, you know, I've had the, I don't know if it's the pleasure or the plight of interviewing tens of thousands of people for a sales job. And you start to notice that the older generation, nothing against them, you know, I love them, you know, my parents are one of them, and the Xers and the boomers, you know, they're amazing people as individuals, but as a whole, they have a very static mindset, and they have a very, very large aversion to growth, both personally, professionally, you know, spiritually, physically, you know, all it's just growth at large is not something that was maybe necessary for them when they were growing up and necessary for them when they were coming up. So it's not as much of a habit or it's not as much of a necessity in their mind. So I'm all about growth. I know that's what, you know, a big part of this podcast is and about, you know, improving. And I used to think that, you know, in school, I had this really weird realization that if you didn't make, like, at least at my school, I went to private school because my parents worked hard. You know, they came from nothing and parents, grandparents were immigrants and came, you know, so they worked really hard to put me through private school. And the problem there, and I don't know if it was like that everywhere else, was that if you had to make school look easy or you weren't smart, you know, if you put in, if you put in effort into like school, like you were dumb. Like if you studied a lot, you were dumb because you had to study to get good grades. But in life, like that's not how life works, you know, like it's not like life is not like, it just doesn't look easy. And, you know, the things that, the people who do well are the ones who actually study, you know, who take the time to do the work. And we can all think about those people who got really, really good grades and we go, oh, they're just so smart. But if you were to go home, you know, with them, you would have seen them studying and their, you know, hours that they spent doing the actual homework and doing the reading and all of these things. You don't always see the behind the scenes. And I just think that the Xers and the boomers really came from a system where things had to look easy. And if you tried and you invested your time and your effort, and, you know, into something, it meant that you were kind of like deficient and it meant that you weren't as, you know, as good or you weren't enough. And so, you know, I think that's a very, you know, that's just my perspective and my observation. Right. Who am I to say that that's any truth? But that's what I've noticed in a lot of older people. And whereas with the younger people, there is a much, you have to know how to adjust. You have to know how to update. I mean, you know, we get an update every single day. Our phones are updating every single day. We're learning a new way to use an app on our phone, and just our aversion to change is so much less because we know the value that can come with it. So I think that it's not really an age thing for me. Is like, is someone willing to actually learn? Because some of my favorite people to work with are boomers or Xers who have a growth mindset and who may not necessarily get all the technology right away, or who may not, you know, understand how to use Snapchat, but they see the value in it and they're willing to learn and they're willing to come in with an open mind, and they don't, you know, they don't poo-poo on it because it's new. And I think that for me is probably the biggest thing, is that when someone has a closed mindset, you know, the whole you can't teach an old dog new tricks thing, like that for me, I can't work with that. You know, I step away from that. And I think I learned that early in my career, that those people just, I didn't want in my organization. And, you know, when you start turning it into kind of a consumer based product, you know, you just realize, you know, who your ideal customers are. And it, you know, I have people in my course and, you know, in our digital degree program who are not like millennials by age at all. And by any extent, they're actually older, you know, they're probably Xers, but they, right. But they associate younger, right? They hang out with people who are younger because they know that they're going to learn more things, you know? And so there are those types of people. So I don't think it's an age thing. I think it's whether or not someone is willing and able to learn and willing and able to adapt.
So what made you choose then the name Millennial Skills?
I don't remember. I'm such a believer in like that those types of things, and maybe your name is maybe not something like that, but your brand, or excuse me, your logo and your design and your colors, and like so many people get caught up in that stuff when they're creating a business that they don't actually take the like the actual steps to turn it into a business. And for 5 or 6 months, they're waiting on, you know, their logo, you know, their designer to get their logo back. And I'm, you know, and that stuff for me, it just irks me. Like, you know, we have an ad agency with my partner and I, and we don't have a website. Like, it's funny because we offer web, you know, Facebook services and ad services, but we don't have a website because at the time I was like, we don't even have customers right now. Like, what do we need a website for? We need to figure out if people are actually going to be willing to pay us. And maybe that is an extreme measure, but to that end, I think that creating, you know, and back to your question, I just let it come to me. You know, I started to engage with people. I started to just put out content. I started to test the waters, see what people needed, you know, talk to people. Like, you know, I kind of internalize it, and I just listen to my audience. And I don't know, one day I was at a mastermind and we were talking about it and something came down and I wrote it down, and, you know, I have no idea. And some people have said that it's a really, really good thing. Some people said it's too long. I don't know. I think that's probably good that we're on both ends of the spectrum, but I'm a big believer in, like, go out and do the work, figure out if there's an audience, figure out if there are people who are willing to listen to what you have to say or what you have to offer. And in that, you'll be able to find your brand, your name, your design, your logo. Like, all that stuff will come through the actual process of going out and doing the work. So
interesting.
That's a long answer.
No. But I think you definitely hit on a few good points there. You know, I have a background in being part of what was called the foundation, and still is. And that's one of the biggest things that we teach or is taught, is that you need to really, you know, you have an idea and you need to re-verify it, and you need to verify it again. And doing that, you're just doing, you know, going through conversations and just, you know, getting validity through if people are going to pay you for your services or not. So, yeah. And then once you actually have the time to, now that you're actually bringing in an income from your, you know, your, what is it, the MVP, then you're like, okay, now I can put a flag into the ground, because, you know, there's actually a beachhead here, so to speak. So another thing, and you were just talking about this, was that you just throw content out there like crazy, and, you know, it's posted all over Facebook and, you know, I'm sure other social media platforms. What I realized, though, is that you don't necessarily have your own hub yet of all this content. Maybe you do, and maybe I just didn't see it. Is that something you think millennial entrepreneurs aren't as worried about, keeping all their stuff in their own house anymore? Because I got to tell you, it scares the crap out of me to not put all my stuff in one spot for people to be like, oh, yeah, okay, so this is the progression, and these are all the different things that I can look up of his or hers.
Yeah, I definitely think about that, and for me, it's a direction that we're moving. But what I've also noticed is that Facebook is the new blog. You know, that a Facebook profile can act just like a blog these days. And with the algorithm, if you're putting out good content, people are going to see your stuff. So what I should do, and, you know, as we're talking about it, I probably should get an assistant, or, because I'm not going to do, there's way too many videos to wade through, is to go through and create a library. But I've realized that Facebook does a very good job of bringing quality content to people's attention. And so if you are putting out, you know, quality statuses, and, you know, I mean, a few years ago, it would be really weird for someone to read a 1,000-word Facebook status. You know what I mean?
Right.
But today,
right,
that happens on the reg. And those, you know, are some of the most, if they are well-written, some of the most engaging posts are some of these long-written posts. They have to be good, for sure. But the nice thing is that you have, you know, 30, 40, 50 people like it, all of a sudden you're popping up in more people's news feeds. And so for me, yes, absolutely, we are going to work on creating that hub. And we have a millennial skills community where, you know, our Facebook group houses a lot of that, you know, a lot of that content. So There's that a little bit, but our goal in that was really to just, it was kind of Grant Cardone's omnipotence, you know, to always kind of be seeing and always be popping up in people's aware, you know, feed and always being top of mind. And, you know, if you produce enough quality content that way, people, you know, come your way. And, you know, I was talking to someone the other day, we added like 200 email addresses to our list, like all organically off of just off of my profile, and a couple of statuses and stuff. So it's a tool that can be used, you know, not to just, not, it's not a broadcast tool anymore. It's really an engagement tool, interaction tool is really what it's become.
Yeah, I've seen a few of those kinds of posts, I guess you could say, but for the majority, I mean, I still see a lot more people just using it. And I guess that's part of the reason why I still just use it as a broadcast, you know, tool myself still. But it makes sense what you're saying for sure. So what are some of the biggest struggles that you've had in starting this second business of yours?
Man, we'd be here all day. You know, I think what I was lucky to have when I first started out and kind of direct sales and building a sales organization was it had come from a time that was much simpler. And so it was very much do this, and then this, and then this happens, and then this happens. And then if you do this, and then you get that. And it's like, you make this many calls, you're going to get this many people, you're going to talk to this many people. And like, and sometimes the digital world and sometimes these other things can be those, it can be that simple too. But there's so many more variables when it comes to the internet world and it comes to internet marketing. I mean, it's just, and the problem is that all of these blueprints are siloed. All of these instruction guides are siloed and they're placed behind, you know, $2,000 or $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 paywalls, which is, you know, by no means to say that they're not worth it. But the problem for, you know, a young entrepreneur is that if they are not in a place where they are able to make that investment or they are not lucky enough to find those specific people, they can spend years, you know, wading through all of the free content and still not necessarily have enough to put it all together and actually create a business out of it.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. I had 8 years of just basically strict raw sales recruiting like experience. Like the great thing is like we just literally had to do biz development, like all of the products, all of the admin, like everything is basically outsourced. Like we, you know, basically it was just, you know, they took care of that stuff. So we just had to drive sales and we just had to drive recruiting. And so it was basically all biz development, you know, all the marketing side of it. And so I came with a super strong background in that. And it still took me, you know, hundreds of hours of in, you know, learning and going through content and training and figuring out, you know, how to make a web, you know, just like even what would seem like a basic thing is not so basic anymore because there's so many different products and softwares and stuff like that. So
right.
For someone to learn, you know, even the basic like landing pages right now, there's probably four or five different types of you know, websites that you can utilize, right? The kind of the main ones, the ClickFunnels, the lead pages, you know, the Wix, you know, the all, you know, the Squarespace, these types of things. And they all are different. You know, they're all different in terms of how to actually create something. So all of these different skills are now required for someone to monetize their expertise, which is great because it's possible, but there's, it's just a lot more complicated.
Which is funny. This is about the point where if this was a bigger podcast, like The Art of Charm, you'd suddenly hear a sound and be like, "Hey, everybody that's listening, thanks for paying attention to the show. Today's show is brought to you by Fizzle.co, where you can get all those answers for cheap." But yeah, no, totally. I mean, I completely understand what you're saying because, yeah, totally. I just, there's just so many big names out there. You know, Russell just dropped his two comma club for $2,500, if a lot more than that. I don't even remember what the price was, but it was like good luck, folks. I mean, it's just, you know, not everybody has that kind of money to pitch at something like that. So, you know.
And, you know, for us, what we've done is, and it's because I've seen how other communities have started to create these like masterminds, and I've been fortunate to be a part of a couple of masterminds that are really well ran and really valuable. And it's like, you know, people invest in like a gym, and you pay a membership for a gym, and you go, and there's all these other people who are thinking about health, you know, getting healthy. There's personal trainers, there's classes and stuff like that. And it's like, now that same sort of thing is becoming available for entrepreneurs. Well, the problem for me, and to go back to your question, was that all of these different skill sets were siloed. So I had to join this community to get, you know, like those funnel, you know, Russell's community to get kind of the digital skills. I had, you know, as part right. of this other mastermind to actually learn, you know, how to create, you know, content and or whatever it is. And there's all these different places that you have to be. And I think for me, you know, wading through all those different courses was, you know, I enjoyed it, but because that's just something that I enjoy, but I could see that being a big challenge because there were so many times where I hit a roadblock and I was like, I don't know if I can do this or I don't know how to do this. And I went out and found the answer, but knowing most people, I don't know that they would go out and have that much, you know, initiative.
Right.
Actually go and do that.
Right. Well, and I think that's why it's important for those of us who, you know, I had this discussion last night with people that thought that they had, you know, they're just now getting out of college and they're like, I don't know what to do in this world because I don't feel like I'm prepared. And I basically said, you know, what you have to do is you need to be the TA of all the big names that are out there. You need to be the connector of these big ideas that, you know, these are, you know, these people have been in the industry for 10 years. You know, I think, you know, I was just talking about Jordan Arbinger and Art of Charm. And then we were talking about Russell, both of which have been in the, you know, the industry for 10 years. And, you know, the thing is that they look at it from like, you know, there's a reason why there's varsity and junior varsity, right? Because the varsity players in high school are going to have they're much more physically developed, right? They can handle things. It's more automatic. The game is more automatic for them. Whereas if you're just a freshman going into a sport, you're still learning the fundamentals. You're still learning the rules. You're still learning the things that you have to work on to be able to perform at that higher level. And so for people that are like us that have a basic understanding or more of how things work, then it's our job to be able to relay that information to people that are not necessarily up to speed where we're even at.
So, right. That's a very good way to look at it. We're like the JV coaches right now. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. 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 Yeah. So, or the TAs, if you want to look at a college. So,
yeah. I dig it.
Yeah. Speaking of Russell, you know, one of the things that he talks about in his expert secret book is that you need to niche down super deep if you want to become some, you know, very well known at something. And like me, you like discussing personal development as well as business related topics. And, you know, this is a perfect combination for entrepreneurs and exactly what we were just talking about. You know, they need both of it. And I see those worlds coming together closer and closer all the time. What do you think about, you know, the advice that's out there that says you have to niche way down, niches in the rich or riches are in the niches, versus, you know, being more broad and doing the work that's meaningful for you?
Yeah, I think it's tough, and I'll be fully transparent. You know, when I first started Millennial Skills, the reason we originally called it Millennial Skills was because it was about personal development and personal growth, because I had, you know, had all this experience working with young people and training young people in what was oftentimes their first job, and we were essentially helping them to start their first business. And I just saw how inadequately prepared they were, right? So I knew right. that I knew that personal development was the ticket and what, excuse me, was the answer and was kind of the antidote to that. But the problem was, is that as I started to move into this space and started to work with these people, I realized that young people and millennials, they don't realize, or there's not an awareness of that need unless they either hit rock bottom and things are going really, really bad. And, you know, they've really hit the rock bottom. They go, oh crap, I need to figure my stuff out. Or they're running a business, you know? Mm-hmm. And I found that those were the two places that made people wake up and realize that how they dealt with themselves, the mindsets and the habits and all of the things that we talk about in personal growth and development, that those things actually mattered in a business. I wanted to work with those people just because I wasn't as passionate about, I wasn't as passionate about helping people who are in like a dramatically tough place. I mean, those people need help. I just, it's just not me, you know. It's not, I've been pretty blessed, you know, so I just would feel weird helping. And the, you know, I think you understand what I'm saying. And I had an experience and I had, you know, a value and I had, real things to share. You know, in 2015, I read like 50 books that year and it totally just sent me on just a total different, you know, path of personal development. And I wanted to give that back and kind of share it. So that's how I landed on it. But to be honest, it originally started just because I was passionate about talking about personal growth and development. But then I realized that I needed to niche down a little bit more and actually create, you know, to talk about it in the context of entrepreneurship. But I'll tell you, a lot of people, and I say a lot of people, and I say most people, and you know, whatever that means, are too general with their audience. And even me, I struggle. I'm like, man, can I get even more clear on who my customer is? You know, but most people are like, well, I'm like, who do you want to serve? And they're like, anybody who wants to get better. And I'm like, all right, that's not going to cut it. Like, that's not better.
Well, because like for me, like I'm starting to really enjoy calling myself the entrepreneurial engineer. Like I like talking about personal development, stuff like this. Don't get me wrong. I do. But I have a gift of being able to look at tech. I always have been like an early adapter of all things tech and being able to explain it and integrate it into other people's working flows or lives or things like that and showing them how it's important, right? And I've realized that I can talk about personal development all day, but that's my specific thing, right? I think that everybody has to find what their specific thing is.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can't be that one niche and then say, oh yeah, I'm also good at health. Oh, or I'm also good at mindset. Oh, I'm also good at, I mean, you can, but that's something.
I think it all has to be in the context of your expertise, you know, it all has to relate back. And because I think that for sure, you know, mindfulness and for sure health are important, but I'm only going to talk about them in the context of entrepreneurship. You know, I'm not going to, you know, at least right now, because that's my truth and that's my experience. Because I've had times, you know, you talk about those things. Like I've had times where I was running a business and I was running it on California burritos, which I'm not sure if you know what a California burrito is, but what they do is they put as much carne asada, fries, and cheese as they can fit into like a gallon size tortilla. And sometimes they can drizzle a bunch of, you know, sauce on it. I used to, eat those every night at like 11:30 at night because that would be the only thing that was open, right? A 24-hour drive-through. And I would run my life on that. You know, like it was literally, I'd wake up, I wouldn't eat. I'd get like a coffee or something like that. Would like be at the office all day working so I wouldn't think about eating. And then I'd, leave the office way after everything was closed. And it resulted in me running myself down, you know, it resulted in me being in the fattest I ever was,
right?
You know, and all of that bleeds into everything else. You know, I look back on those times. I also, you know, wasn't as confident with, you know, in my relationships during that time. I wasn't as happy or fulfilled with, you know, with what I was in, like all of those things. And who knows if just eating, you know, played a part in it, but or eating would have solved everything, but it definitely played a part. So I think being able to relate it back or being able to have a context for those things is always helpful. because our life is not, you know, entrepreneurship, especially solopreneur, is not like black and white. It's not you go to work and then you come home and then you know you're at home. It's like you don't even take your work home with you. Like your work is at your home already.
At least for me, I have a separate room. You know, you know? When Pat Flynn was starting, he had what, a separate corner of his apartment. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's difficult. But that leads me, I mean, to this question. I mean, how do you find clarity now that you're, you know, niching down even more so? And I feel myself doing the same thing because, you know, you just get to know what people need more and more. How do you find clarity in your purpose or even in your business? You know, give me 3 or 5 steps for that.
You know, you talked about me putting out a lot of content, and then the reason that I do that is really what I'm doing is kind of testing, and I'm always trying to see what my audience responds to, because that's how I, you know, that's what leads to new Facebook Live videos. So that's what leads to new topics or discussions or emails or whatever it is. And one thing that really hit with kind of my audience the other day was this stages of an entrepreneur. And it was really, I had just, you know, for me, it was kind of intuitive, but to really lay it out in front of people seemed to make a lot of sense. And the first was awareness. And then you go through growth and then contribution. And it's really like understanding, and the first part of awareness, just like waking up and looking at and identifying what your, like what your talents are, what your passions are, what you can, like what you are willing to wake up and commit your entire life to. And when you say your life, like your day, I think about the last 2 days. I woke up at 6 or 7 in the morning, and I didn't like stop working till like 9 or 10 at night. You know what I mean? Like I didn't stop working, and it's not that I like was miserable, and for sure I had some breaks and stuff like that. And I took time to eat and all that stuff. But like, what are you willing to commit yourself to fully? You have to look into internalize it. So the first part is awareness, and then growing, right? And like growing in those initial, like in whatever that capacity is, and those specific skills or leadership or you know, finances or whatever you need to tackle to take that next step, like investing that time, that money, that effort, whatever it is that you need to do. And then giving back. Like the last step is contribution. And I think a lot of people, especially in our kind of world, you know, with younger entrepreneurs, they skip this and they want to go straight to contribution. And I have a lot of people who message me and they go, I want to be, you know, I want to be a consultant. I want to be a business consultant. And I go, okay, well, have you ran any businesses? And they go, no, this is going to be my first business. And I go, well, you probably shouldn't be a business consultant for your first business. You should probably work through these stages. And a lot of times it just comes from kind of looking inside. So I was lucky enough to stumble on some steps, and we put like a PDF and a document together that kind of walks people through all these steps. So if you'd like, you know, we can link out that to your audience and stuff. But it walks through, you know, all of the different steps that someone needs to actually monetize their passions and monetize the ideas that they have and create something that's a real business.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely include that in the show notes. 2017, already past the first quarter, already in the second quarter. What do you, what's some of the things that you got going on that you're currently working on that has you excited for the future?
Well, I'm a constant serialpreneur, so I'm always building new things. So we have a separate ad agency that we're building. So I like to always be starting new things. So that's kind of just separately from everything that we've talked about, something that's been taking a lot of my time. But in terms of the millennial skills, we got a couple of things. We just booked our venue for our first live event. We're going to be doing a few things. We're going to be launching our book. We're going to be having our first live transformation summit in December. So I'm excited about that. And we have this sweet venue down in Southern California that's like, it's an art museum. It's like, it's way, we were going to do it at like a restaurant. It was like, it's going to be insane. It's going to totally up the level of, you know, of what we need to put together. So that's coming up. So we're planning for that. And then we just launched our digital degree program. So we've got people who are going through, it's not just a course. You know, what it is it's really what I wished I had, or what would I wish that I, you know, what I needed while I was in school to actually get me started to run a business, like the actual class that would have been practical and helpful, you know, especially in a 2017 and what I call a digitally complicated world. So we got a couple of things that are in the works, and, you know, always building the community and always building, you know, just What I really wanted to be is I didn't want this to be about me, and I didn't want it to be like I was very intentional to not create a business page that said, you know, Hector Santiesteban, motivational speaker, because quite frankly, that makes me want to vomit, you know, like that whole thing. And like, I didn't even want to be a coach. Like one big part of the digital degree program is we do one-on-one coaching with them. And the only reason I included it was because people said that that was their favorite part and that was the most helpful part. And I was like, oh, like, I don't know, like coaching with Hector, like that makes me want to vomit too. Like maybe that's my insecurity or whatever, but it is a little bit more than a course because they get the content. And I think content is great, but information alone is not useless. And so we help people with the implementation of it. But then even beyond that is the accountability aspect and actually being and surrounding themselves with people who are actually doing it and being able to interact with those people. So it's not that it's an immersion program, but what's awesome is people can immerse themselves into something that will get them clear on the steps that they need to take to actually create a viable business, because so many people stay in that kind of wantrepreneur stage. I know people don't like to use those words, but you know, so many people stay stuck in that phase.
It's true.
And we get people moving. You know, we give you some clarity. I say do this, do that. You know, smack you around a little bit if you need. You know, if you're, I'm just kidding. But you know, it's really an intensive and kind of a boot camp to get someone going. So. I'm excited about that, and we've got some people who have gotten some pretty cool results, and I think that's always the best part is when you put something together, and then for sure like it works, like that's the cool part. But then the cooler part is to see like the effects of it working and to see other people having, you know, growing businesses and landing, you know, 5-figure deals and, you know, having, you know, a community growing around them because of the things that we talked about, you know, in our program. So, that's me ranting, but I'm excited. It's a lot of cool things.
No, it sounds like you definitely have a lot of work on your plate, and I'm kind of curious how you have had the capacity to do it all, but that's another story. Going into the rapid fire questions, what are your 3 biggest influencers or teachers that have launched you to where you're at today?
First one I have to say is my mom. Like I, you know, it would be remiss to, you know, to not say her. We have the same birthday and, which is amazing for me. It probably sucked for her that 1 year, but it's been cool ever since. And, to share a bond with someone, you know, like that. And we've become best friends and when I first got into entrepreneurship and I first got into business for myself, I don't know that she believed in me or if she believed, I don't know, but she let me do my thing and she supported me and she, that was the biggest thing that I think I needed when, you know, I was young, and to have someone support me was so big. And, you know, the first, it was always like kind of a questioning, like, all right, are you sure? Like, okay. You know, like that was always that, but it was always out of love. And, you know, the second time around when I told her that I kind of shut down the sales organization and I was going to do this crazy thing called digital marketing, she was like, all right, I'm happy for you. Like, I'm proud. Like, what do we got to do? You know? And she kind of, the tables had turned and it was, that right there was very validating more than anything, you know, was having someone, you know, believe in you who, you know, has been there and she's seen the whole struggle and the journey and stuff. So, she was the first one. Hal Elrod is someone who's been a coach of mine since I was in college, and he's the author of The Miracle Morning. I'm not sure if you've
heard of Hal. I've heard of Hal on several shows. So,
Hal, I've coached. I knew Hal before. Well, he was still Yo Pal Hal, and he actually sold Cutco back with, you know, and he coached me while I was, you know, in sales. And his mastermind was actually what led me to create our digital degree program and like all these things. And he's a corporate sponsor for the book, and he's just done so many amazing things in giving. But more than anything, he's really taught me, you know, what being a genuine person and what giving real value can do. And, you know, he's going through a tough battle with cancer right now.
Yeah,
he's really challenged by some things, but what I've noticed in all that is it's incredible to see his community, his business, everything can still continue to build despite him not necessarily putting his foot on the gas pedal. He's gotten someone to come and, you know, drive the big rig, and he's still, you know, if you were to look, if an alien were to come in and look at Hal's financials, they would be like, man, this guy's killing it this year. You know, like, this guy's business is rocking, you know, and obviously that's just, it's a testament to the systems that he put in place before, you know, unfortunately things kind of went south. So He was a big one. And then, I would just say this free content, I don't know what you want to call it. I want to call it an extravaganza, but this phenomenon is a better word. Of free content has changed my life, because I did not know how to sell. I did not know how to run a business. I did not know how to communicate. You know, you said earlier, you know, you like I had experience doing videos. Like, I did not know how to do any of that stuff. But there were people out there who were willing to put out content and willing to have podcasts like these, and like willing to teach me those things so that I could get started. And, you know, whether it's Gary Vaynerchuk or Grant Cardone or Russell Brunson or, like, you know, Ty Lopez or, like, you know, Lewis Hauser, like, like, the list goes on and on and on. Like, Jordan, you know, like, all of those people, you know, I inhaled from 2013, maybe go back to 2012 to 2017, I have inhaled maybe 2,000, 3,000, maybe 4,000 podcasts, you know, over that time.
Yeah.
Like it was just, I can't think back to a time when there wasn't some sort of content just running on background, you know, whether it's in my car, whether it's when I'm washing my dishes, I just always have content running on, because I don't know, I dig it, you know, it fills me up. Like, why not? You know what I mean? And it's, I look back, and to kind of go back to what we talked about before, like, my dad, when he hangs out and he's just kind of lounging, like, he watches the news, and quite frankly, like, that frustrates the hell out of me. And, like, just watching it riles me up and makes me, like, upset. And so I can't do that, for starters. Right. But instead of kind of filling your brain with something like that, that may or may not contribute to you at any level, like, why not listen to a training or a podcast or, you know, a YouTube video or whatever, audio, but there's so many options now that it's 2017, that it would be a disservice to living in this time period to not utilize all of that free information. So right. I couldn't pick one person, because there's been times where I'm a binge listener, you know, and I will go 2 or 3 weeks and I will inhale as much content from one person as I can. And then I'll find someone else and I'll buy their training and do that again for someone else. So it's been a lot.
No, and I feel you on the news thing, man, because one of the reasons I had kept back, I think it was like when I was still in college, one of the reasons why I never cut the cable was because, oh, I have to have my news channel. Well, the only news that I really pay attention to is maybe the morning news, where I'm trying to figure out, okay, do I need a jacket for the day or not? Or two, it's like, I'll listen to Glenn Beck's show for about an hour or so. But what's really interesting about him, besides, you know, he talks about political stuff, he actually goes away from that quite a bit anymore. Recently, he's been talking a lot about how AI is going to be changing the world here in the next 5 years or something like that. And he's also been bringing on, like, Kamal Ravikant was on there. He's actually the brother of the other Ravikant, who's well known in, as a guy in Silicon Valley. And so Kamal is actually the author brother. And he's talking about rediscovery in his books and finding yourself and all that sort of stuff. Really awesome interview. Then he's had Lewis Howes on a couple weeks ago. That was cool to hear him. I was like, shoot, I never actually heard all of Lewis's story. And just today he had, what's the guys that wrote Eyes Wide Open? Just a new book came out. Isaac Lidsky, that's it. And so, I mean, it's just definitely for those of you guys that might find yourself listening to podcast, check out Glenn. I try to highlight some of those better interviews that he has with some of those names that, you know, at least in my show notes. But yeah, as far as podcasts go, man, right there with you. Obviously, I always listen to Pat, have been since pretty much his first podcast. In fact, I haven't listened to him since his first podcast, not all of his episodes, mind you, But, you know, just when I have some spare time driving down the road or whatever. Another one that I listen to fairly regularly is School of Greatness. And then, of course, we've been talking about The Art of Charm, which has become more of an interest of mine recently. Thinking about potentially reaching out for Jordan Harbinger at some point to be on the show, because that would be an interesting talk. And Unmistakable Creative is another one that I tend to follow. And did I mention The Fizzle Show? Because, yeah, there's definitely that one. But, yeah, here's another question for you. What are some social norms or a social norm that tends to irritate you a little bit?
Oh, you know what I really hate is when people say, oh, tell them I said hi. That's the worst. That irks me so much.
That's interesting.
It bothers me because, you know what? And this all goes back to, I think too much and I observe a lot, or I try and make connections, but 20 or 30 years ago, like that made sense. You know, if you mm-hmm. said, oh, tell them I said hi, because there's no way that I could ever connect with them because I'm not going to actually go over and talk to them or I'm not going to pick up the phone and call them because it wouldn't warrant that. But if you want to tell them hi today, freaking send them a Facebook message or DM them I don't care. If you care enough to tell them to say hi, you tell them hi. Like that is not like, it's so superficial, you know, and right. It's so like, tell them I said hi. Like, so that what they can say, oh yeah, they said hi back. Like who wins in that, you know, like, no, you don't actually get to interact with them. They don't actually interact with you. I'm just playing this intermediary who now has to deal with your guys' awkward incommunication. So,
Well, I did not know that was such an issue. Like, seriously, I mean, who says that? Obviously, it happens more than once in your.
I have a lot of people. My family says it a lot. And
really?
Yeah. You know, people who are on their phone and they're like, you know, tell them I said hi. I'm like, no, I don't know. You tell them.
That's cool. Well, odd, but wow. Yeah, I don't hear that much anymore. So that's just why I was kind of curious. Next one, what is an issue do you believe that people ought to be talking about but hardly anybody is?
The fact that we're still driving cars. I live in LA and I had this conversation with one of my, she's someone on my team. She was like one of my assistants. And I remember we were talking and I don't know how it came up, but she goes, I was like, I can't wait for, you know, robot drivers or driverless cars to come around because this traffic is insane. And she's like, you want robots to drive cars instead of humans? And I was like, abso-freaking-lutely. Have you like been on the roads? And this is before she had gotten her driver's license. She was in college, but for whatever reason was just not, didn't feel like driving was a necessity, which in LA is kind of crazy to do. But you know, I think in 20 or 30 or 40 years, our grandkids are going to look back and go like, grandpa, like you guys actually used to drive the cars. And then we're going to be like, you know, grandson, you know, yeah. And hundreds of thousands of people died because of it. And now we just let, you know, Bob the robot do it. And everybody gets there really safe and we get to hang out and, you know, watch TV while we are on the road, and it's so much safer and cheaper and clean and all these things. And we're going to look back, and the fact that we actually drove our own cars, I think, is going to be something that's very foreign. And I'm in LA, so I'll tell you, yeah. I it took me one time an hour and a half to go 7 miles. And not because, here's the problem, okay? Not because there was an accident or not because there was any urgent or the president came into town, which has happened before. And I can understand that. It was just Thursday. And it took me an hour and a half. And I was probably, because I was hungry too, but I literally broke down and cried because my fiance had enchiladas, which is like my favorite meal of hers, waiting on the stove for me. And there was like all this food. And that night I got home and I was like, babe, I'm done. I'm shutting down the operation and I'm working from home.
So that was the tipping point. Wow. That was the tipping
point. And it was the fact that I had to sit in an hour and a half of traffic to go, you know, to go 7 miles. And what could take sometimes 12 minutes, that same trip took an hour and a half. And
wow.
So, you know, I think some people don't quite experience that as bad as we do, but, right. I cannot wait for driverless cars.
Well, two things come to mind, actually three. Next time you're in the flyover mode and you're thinking that you want to go to the East Coast, actually make it a shorter trip and just come here to Indy, where we actually planned out our city before we put it all out there. I mean, we actually have a loop that goes around the city, which is very, very efficient. The other thing is, I don't think I hear it quite a bit, especially from you guys out there in California, more so about the driverless thing. And for one, I'm glad none of you have the fear of what happened in Minority Report and robot's going to kill you.
Well, yeah. I mean, we do it with planes. You know, I live right by the airport, and my when I get off on the exit to my house, it's like we live underneath the, like, not the runway, but like the path that planes fly to land. And every day I'm reminded of how crazy it is that we launch ourselves in a metal tube across the country and let a robot basically fly it.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody does it. And it's actually, I think the statistics are like, it's safer to be in a plane than it is a car. You know, like statistics. I don't know. I could be pulling that totally out of my butt. But someone told me that somewhere. And so I like
to. I'm pretty sure it is anymore, because I think there's been a year or so recently where we've had like no accidents.
It's different. And so I think I live with that reality a lot, and I see that a lot. So for me, that's not a far step. And I think that, you know, that they're going to, like, Minority Report is probably coming, you know, but I don't think driverless cars is the thing that's going to be, like, you know, I think there are worse things that, you know, we've got other issues that we could probably look into.
Well, and again, going back to the Glenn and his buddies, I mean, they're always talking about the fact that the things that you guys are talking about over there, especially the Silicon Valley people and what they're talking about, people here in the Midwest have no fracking clue what's in the pipeline.
Yeah.
And it's just, those are some of the things that we really do need to be talking about. But before we do that, got another couple more questions here. If you woke up tomorrow as your 10-year-old self and all your memories were still intact, what would you do?
I would figure out what I was going to devote my time to. I would figure out what I was going to get really good at, because growing up, I kind of diversified myself, and I was like pretty good at sports, pretty good at school, pretty good, like, you know, socially, whatever that meant. Like, I kind of diversified my time into all these different buckets, and I was pretty good. I was like a B+ student at all of those things. You know, I was captain of the football team, you know, first team all league, but I wasn't, you know, going to play Division I sports. I, you know, got a 1970 SAT score. So it was just not good enough to get into, you know, the top, you know, high end, you know, Stanfords and UCLAs and stuff like that. So it was like, I was like almost good enough to be good at any, you know, a lot of things.
Right.
And it was because I devoted my time to all of these different things. Whereas if I would have really invested myself into one particular thing, right? Whether it was, you know, learning how to run it, like for me, if it was probably at this point, it would probably be realized that I'm 5'6" and Mexican. So I'm probably not going to do anything in athletics anyways. So what I was doing in that realm was, you know, so I probably would kind of make that realization and assumption and throw myself into learning the same, you know, learning more entrepreneurial skills. I would figure out, you know, who I was going to serve, whether or not I was still passionate about helping, you know, maybe people who are older, you know what I mean? Like I would go through that same kind of process, but I would throw myself wholly into that. I would convince my parents to let me drop out of school and take the Gary Vee route. And I would convince them to just let me get started on my life and start building a business like right away. And,
which is totally done. Cause I even just now, the week that we're publishing this, I'm going to be releasing my interview with Easton Allred. And I don't know if you know him, but he's a teenage entrepreneur, had a, you know, home, he was homeschooled, had the time and the focus to work on, you know, business and do some sports, but start his business And it seems to me that a lot of those homeschool kids have that, you know, that ability to do that. I mean, another one would be Caleb Maddox. That, how many followers does he have on Facebook? Like a million?
And, a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, yeah, if I had known back then that, you know, gaming was a complete waste of time and I could be actually putting this thing together. Well, yes and no.
Or maybe not. Maybe because, you do devote yourself to gaming and you also learn the business side of it, because they're selling out the Staples Center here in LA, and there's kids pulling in seven figures playing video games. You know what I mean? So who's to say that that's – but I would identify that route and be like, Mom, okay, check this out. I'm going to show you the crystal ball. There's people making money in this. Like this is what I'm going to devote it, and I'm going to treat it like I would a job, you know? Mm. As opposed to just being, you know, a Cheeto fingered kind of, you know, Dorito looking like, you know, teenager. Yes. That I was.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So what's the secret to achieving personal freedom?
I think it's living, and I stole this from one of my mentors, but it's living in alignment with who you really are. Right. And that really became clear to me this year, because I actually made less money this year than I did last year, you know, top line. And I don't even know. I would probably dive into the financials a little bit more, but I for sure made less money last year, a lot more expenses last year, but made less money this year, but so much more happy, because I'm actually doing what it is that I want to do. I'm actually spending my day doing what it is that I love, which is things like this. Or, you know, we're having a recording earlier today. You know, I was interviewing someone on Facebook Live for our digital degree program. We were diving in and talking about entrepreneurship. And, it, you know, a little later, we've got a, you know, live training where I'm talking about entrepreneurship. And it's like, I fill my day with the things that I enjoy. And that for me is freedom, you know? And I think that living in alignment with what you actually want to do is the definition of freedom.
Mm. Nice. So as we're wrapping up, in your opinion, what is the first few steps that someone can take to get their business off the ground?
I think it's awareness, right? And I think it's going through those stages that I talked about, awareness, growth, and then figuring out how you can contribute to other people. But too many people, they just try and go out there and be this YouTube star, or they create this Instagram when there's no substance to it. And it really bothers me, because I've had people who, you know, have reached out to me and told me, you're a scam, you didn't do this, you didn't create this. And it's like, it gets me really riled up, because like if they were in the trenches with me and they were in the meetings, they were there with me while that was happening, like they wouldn't dare say that, you know, because they wouldn't, because they would see how much actually went into creating those kind of what may seem like, you know, crazy results. I don't think it's very crazy, but you know, some people look at those and a drastic results. So for me, it's really about going through the right stages, though, to make sure that, you know, if I didn't have any substance and I was, you know, didn't have any real experience, I wouldn't feel right going out there and offering my, you know, strategies and my tips. I might, you know, go and interview people or ask people or do the research and all this stuff. But I think that people need to really go through the right stages of growing in that right area. And I also talk to my people that growth doesn't come just from like learning or like just from listening or watching. Like growth comes from taking action. Like you grow the most when you actually take action and put something into the world and you see how it works. And you grow when you not only actually put something out there, but then you grow when you are learning what your market is saying about it. You know, if it's hitting, awesome. You grew and you learned. If it's not, well, then there is growth in that learning that thing didn't work. So don't do that again, you know, and change it up. So I think that just going through those stages and being really clear on it is helpful. And that, you know, the 29 steps PDF, you go to millennialskills.com/idea. You can get it there. It's a little download, free download. People have asked me, they're like, hey, you should sell this. And I'm like, no, that's not the point. you download it, you put it on. I've had people tell me they put it on the refrigerator. Some people say they hang it on their wall and they've read it like, you know, multiple times and each time get something new, because it's really that blueprint, you know, that recipe to making this Thanksgiving feast, which, you know, is kind of hard to put together sometimes on your own. So nice. That's what I would say.
All right, cool. And easiest way to find you if they want additional help with those 29 different items?
So easiest way to find me is on Facebook. We've got, you can just search Millennial Skills Community. We've got a group there. You can like us on Facebook. Instagram's growing a little bit. We've got a YouTube channel. There's some stuff up there that's a little older, but best place to find us is Facebook. And the community has all of the videos that we've done, all the interviews. So you can just go back and click the video section of it and take a look at all the content. There's hours of content that you can go through.
All right. Awesome. Well, Hector, definitely a pleasure having you on, man. It was great. Thank you.
You got it. All right.
And there you have it, guys. I hope you enjoyed this interview with Hector. Dude is definitely cranking in his popularity. And I think the main reason is that he's just real. I don't think there's any way other way to say it. You know, he gives things to you straight, which many people don't do these days. Again, show notes and the show note extras can be found at newinceptions.com/94. And in our discussion, we talked a little bit about his early attempts to start his online business, part of which was discussing personal development work. So I'm going to start today's show note extras with two videos that I think he did pretty well from YouTube that bring up some good points, including reasons why people are broke. And the second one is about mastering yourself and why that's so important. From there, I'm going to head over to Facebook and add a couple of his more recent videos. In the chat, he mentioned 29 steps to starting your business. Well, I have a video where he shares those 29 steps. And then he also had a FaceTime discussion with Amanda Rivera recently that I'll go ahead and add, because what they're discussing in it is something that I find very interesting in today's world, facilitating other leaders. I think it's really timely discussion that I think a lot of us should be having in our entrepreneurial communities. So that said, thanks again for joining us today. And as usual, really appreciate it. With all the different podcasts that are out there and all the different YouTube videos that could be taking your guys' attention, somehow you managed to find this little show, and we really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. Love hearing from you. Those of you who have gotten this far in the conversation, you can send us an email at heyguys@newinceptions.com with any questions you have about the show or comments or, you know, anything that you need more clarity about. Really appreciate those iTunes reviews. And if you're listening to us on your desktop, you can visit newinceptions.com/AOL iTunes to leave a review. If you're listening to the show on your iPhone, which I know a lot of you guys do, you can simply hit the reviews tab and add your own review there. Really, really would appreciate those. Those of you who aren't using iTunes, however, you can feel free to leave your reviews on SoundCloud. That's where I tend to hang out and see more of those come in. Definitely would appreciate, you know, having anything there as well. And if you want to get connected with Hector directly or any of our past guests, other listeners, or members of the team, you can do so by going to the AOL networking group on Facebook. To get to it directly, you can go over to newinceptions.com/AOL networking and it will take you straight there. In next week's show, Veronica and I interview author Gregory Diehl. And besides being an author, Gregory is also the host of Uncomfortable Conversations with Gregory. And I have to tell you, I think it's a pretty interesting show. And Veronica and I both had the opportunity to be on it. And I actually felt that in my session, it was more of a ranting session for both of us, because, you know, we both had this kind of same perspective on what we were talking about. And that particular episode hasn't been released yet, but I'll definitely let you guys know when it is. Anyhow, in our discussion with Gregory, we find out more about his books, the podcast, and the stories that went into making both. And we also learn of his traveling life and why he prefers to be called a citizen of the world versus a digital nomad. Gregory is really unique individual, and I don't want you guys to miss out on this interesting conversation. I don't think it was so much uncomfortable, but definitely interesting. Make sure you get informed when it does go out. All you have to do is like the New Inceptions page on Facebook, and then underneath the following tab, just select See First. So again, that's it for session 94. Don't forget to check out Read It For Me by going over to newinceptions.com/readitforme. Yes, there's two URLs for the same place.
This one's a little bit easier to remember. So newinceptions.com/readitforme. And I appreciate you guys for joining Hector and myself today. And until next time, gang, dig in, have fun, and take care in whatever you're creating. And we'll see you back here next time.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter at newinceptions, Instagram at new.inceptions, and on the web at newinceptions.com.